It's the WTIL Morning News with Tom Meredith, Jim Lee, and Will Stevenson.
We bring in Pete Weber. Pete, good morning. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Well, good morning, and thank you for the invitation. And guys, I was a kid who went across the radio dial all the time, day and night. And I was drawn to Lloyd Pettit during the Chicago Blackhawks games at a very early age. And then, to show you my age, there were only six teams in the NHL at that point. Then all of a sudden there was Jack Buck first doing the St. Louis Blues. And then a guy named Dan Kelly, who was a dominant hockey announcer for many years.
All right. I didn't realize Jack Buck had actually even done hockey. There was a new one to me.
He was the first voice.
Wow,
first
okay.
Voice of the St. Louis Blues. And as I got that verified because my broadcast partner, Terry Crisp, played for the first five versions of the St. Louis Blues.
So speaking of the first voice, isn't that your situation with the Preds? You've been there, what, 15 years, and you're the original voice of the Predators, aren't you?
Yeah, reported for the first day of training camp, September 12th, 1998. And it's kind of hard to believe how quickly that time has passed.
Tell us how you you said you listened to some of the great hockey announcers here in the Midwest, but again, it's not a game that you see much now. Of course, now we have teams in Peoria and the Quad Cities if you want to go kind of learn the ropes of hockey. But how did you really start to get familiar with all the rules of the sport? Because a lot of us would have a hard time calling a hockey game just because we're not that familiar with it.
Yeah, I understand that. But the fact of the matter was, radio, I'm sure, transfixed you guys in your younger days, too. And I was just absorbed into the game. And then when I went to Notre Dame, we had D1 hockey there at the time, and I started actually doing the games there. My first ever hockey broadcast was in 1974 when I went back to Notre Dame and got my master's degree. I was doing Notre Dame at Boston College, and those nice fathers at Boston College, those nice Jesuit fathers, decided to put my broadcast location right in front of the BC Pep Band.
Oh,
so
man.
I had no idea what I was saying because I couldn't hear myself, not to mention the call saying, hey, you can't hear yourself think.
Oh, yeah. We've all been through that. I know Jim and I both, you know, doing basketball, have had that in a really loud gym, and the band either right behind you or just echoes in a gym. So, yeah. And I'm sure you've gotten a lot of that over the years. One of the things I was going to ask you, and you know, for me, not knowing that much about hockey, but you know, you watch minor league baseball. Baseball is kind of baseball. Mm-hmm. Basketball at different levels. It's basketball. You can see really good at different levels. And one thing for me, not even really knowing the game of hockey, the first few minor league games I had gone to, you know, a couple of Peoria Prancers, and then the Rivermen later, Quad City Mallards. He's like, okay, this is pretty interesting. First time, and I've only actually, honestly, been to one NHL game, and this would have been early 90s. It was the old Chicago Stadium, Blackhawks and Penguins. Savard was still with the Hawks and Lemieux with the Penguins. And even not knowing hockey, I could just see the difference in the skill level and the speed. It was like a totally different game from that to the minor leagues, it seemed like to me anyway.
The tempo definitely increases, and that we still hear that from the guys who get called up. Our farm club is in Milwaukee. And when they get called up from the Admirals, they go, boy, this is really fast. So what you noticed is a very accurate representation of the way that it is. These are the best players in the world now. Now, when I started, it was, you know, a few U.S. players. Then you had the guys who came out of French Canada and English-speaking Canada. Now, for example, one year when I walked into the Predators' dressing room, there were seven different languages being spoken in there. So the best players from throughout the world have been assembled into the National Hockey League.
Hmm. How about Nashville? You've been there this long. I assume the city has treated you well.
It's treated me very, very well. Yeah, thank you. And the other thing to observe here is how much the city has grown. There was what then was the Nashville Arena. Now it's called Bridgestone Arena down on Broadway. And not a heck of a lot else downtown other than the old honky-tonks. And the honky-tonks have all been upgraded. Hotels have moved in. The arena has expanded. There is a Music City Center that is roughly four city blocks and six stories tall, a new convention center across from the rink, the Country Music Hall of Fame. It's really been fantastic to observe the growth of this city in that period of time. Because in the summers, I did AAA baseball for 15 years. And I would travel in here from Buffalo three or four times a summer. And we were told, in no uncertain terms, it would be probably a good idea to stay away from the downtown area. Well, that has turned around entirely.
Talking with Pete Weber, he is the television play-by-play announcer for the Nashville Predators of the NHL. Galesburg native, worked here at WGIL, as he mentioned, you spent some time in Buffalo doing AAA baseball there along with hockey. And that's quite a contrast that, you know, a lot of guys, just like with athletes, specialize in sports, especially when you get to that professional level. Boy, what a different tempo doing baseball and doing hockey.
Well, there definitely is a difference to that. You can tell stories in baseball. There's no time to tell stories, really, in hockey, unless the glass should break and the rink guys have to come out, and you have to kill some time there. And then doing the football, I covered very bad Buffalo Bills teams and then very good Buffalo Bills teams. We had the contract at my station when the Bills made the trip to those four consecutive Super Bowls. So that was a very interesting time indeed. And still in contact with many of those people. As a matter of fact, hope we get the chance to get to Canton, Ohio this summer when Andre Reed is put into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, in fact, we had a chance when I was working in Monmouth. They played in the same football conference in college with Co-College, and that was the...
there you go.
Yeah, and Marv Levy came, and he was actually there one day. I got a chance to interview Marv. Of course, he was the head coach of Buffalo for those years, so a lot of Midwest connections, I guess, with that team.
Do you,
when you jump on the train or go to Chicago and you go to Harry Carey's restaurant, ask to see if Marv Levy is in that night. He owns a piece of that now.
Oh, really?
Huh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, and from what I understand, I know, Jim, you've gotten to talk to him. Obviously, you know him well, Pete, but it seems like he's very personable from everybody I've ever heard that's ever talked to me. He's very personable and willing to talk to people.
He certainly is, and I got to tell you, the stories that come out of that man's mind are just incredible. Going back to the co-college days, going back to starting his coaching career at St. Louis Country Day School. I mean, you can go on and on. And if old Kansas City Chiefs fans want to talk to him about running the wing T formation, he'll do that too.
Yeah, I bet. Hey, you know, I was down in Abingdon yesterday, and there was we were talking with members of their baseball team, and one of the young men there is ready to go to college at Western Illinois University, and it wants to get involved in broadcasting. So we told him to let us know here, and we'd see what we could work out. And I guess if you reflect back on that time when you were that age, was broadcasting front and center? Was that what you knew you wanted to do for a career?
You know, initially I was pushed toward the writing end of it, and I used to I worked for Joe Morrissey when he was sports editor of the Register Mail, and I did a lot of fill-in work there. And I thought that was likely what I was going to do. But there was this night when I was actually, instead of just taking the calls at the paper, I was sent out to cover my alma mater now, Costa High School, when they played at Deer Creek Mackinac. And one of the guys at another radio station who was doing the game had an attack of, well, I guess I've had too much coffee to stay up this late during the game, so I better go to the restroom. And so there was an open mic and threw it my way, and that's where I kind of got bit by the bug right there.
Yeah, I guess you get thrown into it. You just do it, huh? Talking with Pete Weber, he is a Galesburg native. He is the television play-by-play announcer for the Nashville Predators. You know, Jim mentioned you being in Nashville for quite a bit of time. Another Nashville connection with our radio stations here, Lon Helton, who got his start on our country station, FM 95, is big in the country music world. In fact, we run his weekly show on Sundays on our station. Do you still keep in contact with Lon?
You know what happened now? Lon, with Wiggle and Wag there, as we recalled back in that period of time, when I would get my dinner break, because I was doing the late part of afternoon drive and then would do the evenings before Jim Sackey took over, Lon gave me my dinner break coming over from the Wag studio to GIL. So we've known each other for a long, long time. I then went into, when I moved here, all of a sudden we were going to a country radio seminar party at the Hard Rock Cafe. This is my first year here, and then when I walk in, who was standing up inside there but Lon Helt? So, yeah, we've had a few reunions since that period of time, and what a career he has had. And keep in mind, he was the guy, one of the first guys hired when NBC turned WMAQ into a country music station back in the 70s.
Yeah. And of all things, you both end up in the same city of Nashville all these years. How ironic.
But he's not giving me a dinner break recently.
Right? So you'll have to talk to him about that. Well, you've had quite a career. You got your start as your first NHL job was actually with the LA Kings, and I'm guessing that was probably in the days. Was that when Gretzky was first there, or was that even prior to Gretzky?
Well, Gretzky got there in 88. I got there in 78.
Oh, so, yeah, a little bit before then.
How about Marcel Dion?
Marcel Dion, Charlie Simmer, and Dave Taylor, the Triple Crown line. That was a very, very great time, to be certain. When Jack Kent Cook was the owner when I got hired there, Jerry Buss, in the middle of it all, took it over. But Cook thought that, you know, having a hockey team in Southern California would be great. He was a Toronto, or actually Hamilton, Ontario native. Then he said, you know, I realized there were 300,000 Canadians in Southern California. How could hockey possibly fail? I realized they moved here because they hated hockey. But nonetheless, that franchise has done extraordinarily well. I was happy enough to be out there as they were going to the Stanley Cup Finals 2 years ago.
Well, it's a little different territory for your team, Nashville, not to be in the playoffs this year. And I know Chicago Blackhawk fans are happy about that because they couldn't seem to figure you guys out much this year.
Yeah, that was difficult to figure, really. And St. Louis absolutely dominated the Preds this season. But the Predators took the season series from Chicago 4-5 games, and including that last home game where it was 3-2 Chicago going the third period. Final score, Nashville 7, Chicago 3. And try to figure that one out with a club that is, Chicago, I know, more than a little bit dismayed over last night's result.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who lost some sleep over, it was a triple overtime game in which St. Louis came away with a win. I have to confess, for a little while, the Z's overtook me. I did wake up time for the end.
Yeah. That's an interesting point because you get to playoff hockey and you see a lot of these long, long overtime, double overtime games. Do the teams just kind of pull the reins in and become a little more conservative during the playoffs?
Sometimes. But the other reason this happens is we always talk about the highlight of going for the Stanley Cup, and the reason you have to be well-armed is with a hot goaltender. Well, last night, Ryan Miller didn't look that good at the outset. Gave up 3 goals in the first period, but he went 85-some minutes without allowing anything thereafter. And that's what happens more often than not. Though people are going to say, hey, Pete, didn't you watch the scores of the previous games, the first night of the playoffs? It looked like it was a Jimmy the Greek situation where everybody was told to take the overs, the high scoring that we have had so far. And the Dallas-Anaheim game number one the other night. I mean, that's 4-0 in the third period, and yet Dallas comes back and makes it a very interesting game down the stretch at 4-3. Montreal and Tampa Bay going to overtime. So I'm going to be very intrigued to see tonight the last series to get started, Detroit at Boston, to see how that plays out. Because usually the early returns are not indicative of the way it's going to go the rest of the playoff series.
Talking with Pete Weber, he's a Galesburg native. He is the television play-by-play announcer for the Nashville Predators. Pete, is there one biggest key in the playoff hockey? I mean, is it a hot goaltender? Is that the one biggest key to a Stanley Cup?
No, there are two keys. A hot goaltender will get you to 0-0.
Somebody
who's a hot scorer as well. And I'm not trying to be simplistic there, but, for example, when Los Angeles won the Cup in 2012, they had an extraordinarily hot goaltender in Jonathan Quick. And this was a great story. I mean, the Kings were the 8th seed in the Western Conference. So in order, they obviously knocked off higher seeds just to get to the Stanley Cup Final. But they needed incredible scoring as well. They overwhelmed teams, really, in their own zone, which made Jonathan Quick's job, a kid from Connecticut, I should turn out, the U.S. Olympic goaltender. And he was getting help from the likes of Andrei Kopitar, from Jeff Carter and Mike Richards. So you need guys who get hot at the other end of the ice, too. And if you can blend the two together, you've got yourselves a great shot.
As we start to push towards 8:30 here, how about the comparison between doing TV and radio? You're in the TV capacity right now. Do you prefer that over the radio, and do you call the game differently from that vantage point?
I'm going to give you Vin Scully's thought on this. And I was lucky enough to brush with him in my times in Los Angeles. And that is, obviously, here's a guy who can't keep a job, right?
Yeah.
1950. The whole thing is, when you're, I think every announcer really prefers radio because you direct the whole thing. You can fall on your keister every now and then try to do it, but the canvas is yours. You have this complete palette of paints to paint the picture. Whereas in television, you are captioning most of the time. You're kind of like headline news is on CNN. And there is where your mind has to be working in concert with the producer and the director as to what shots are going up on the screen. So you hope you get a good team that works very well together that way. And then I had the other complication. For about 8 or 9 years, we did a simulcast here. So in other words, the audio for radio also served as the audio for television.
Wow.
And that would cause for some compromises to be made. For example, we couldn't say, realizing we were on radio, as you see here, or looking down here, down this side. You had to be descriptive at all times. And oftentimes I think that's the more fun challenge.
And I guess in that case, you have your television producer or director in your ear saying, oh, too much, too descriptive, or you don't let the picture talk.
Yeah, but he realizes that you also,
yeah.
And really, particularly in this era where so much of sports is carried on cable, and you realize, and that's the case here, we're Fox Sports Tennessee, we realize that far more people have access to the radio, so we can't look down upon them at all.
A couple quick things, Pete, before we wrap up with you. One, I know people probably saw the story in the Register Mail a few months ago. You had a little health scare, a little heart problem when you were up covering the Preds up in Minneapolis. How's your health at this point?
Been doing absolutely great. Thank you for asking. The heart attack was as minimally an interruption as there possibly could have been. It was the game before, essentially, the Olympic break kicked in. I was lucky in that Google told me the symptom I was experiencing, a tingling along my jawline, was something that should be checked. So I went to the trainers, and about 45 minutes later, I was on a table in the cath lab at United Hospital in St. Paul, getting an angioplasty and 3 stents, and I was feeling better as that whole procedure went along. And I've been very fortunate. There's no damage to the heart muscle, and thank you for asking.
Very good.
Nothing like a WebMD, I guess, to get that initial diagnosis, huh?
You know what I did? I actually, because I had been told before that if you look at WebMD sometimes, you might think that breathing is...
Yes, that's true.
So I just went to general Google, if you will, and took a look at the entries there.
One last thing, Pete. I saw if people want to follow you on Twitter, at Pete Weber Sports is your handle.
Yes.
And I love your picture, your Twitter picture, with you and the Hanson triplets. That's outstanding.
Well, that was taken at the site of one of the rinks they used to shoot the movie Slapshot in the mid-70s. That was taken back at the rink in Syracuse, New York, when I was doing work for the Empire Sports Network up there.
All right. Well, Pete, we want to thank you so much. People can catch you still. You do some stuff on ESPN. You do some stuff on the NHL Network, SiriusXM, Channel 204. And I take it you're probably doing some stuff for all these during the playoffs.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, this week you would think I was in the playoffs.
So this is about the only downtime you have right now, huh?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
All right. Pete, thank you so much for taking the time to join us this morning. Hope to get a chance to chat with you again.
Thank you very much, and hello to all my classmates, Costa Class of 1969.
All right. Pete, thank you. Have a great day.
You're welcome.
News, information, and great conversation every weekday morning. The WGIL Morning News on Galesburg Radio 14 WGIL.